They wanted to know all about them, so I told them. Maribel and Raoul are a young married couple full of vitality. I imagine they were the sort of people who got up in the morning very happy and full of energy, without a drop of a bad mood. They are very different from me. I wake up every morning with a temper and in a bad mood. They honestly adore each other and they are genuinely affectionate with everyone. It's hard not to like them. They have such a great sense of humor. I swear I couldn't stop laughing when they told me the story of how they got taken. At first, however, the experience really affected them, but now they can laugh and joke about it. When it happened, they weren't married yet. In 1988 they were still dating and Maribel was still a virgin. They told me they were in Raoul's father's car at a beach in the east side of the island. They were in the back seat kissing very passionately, or graziandos. Things got very hot and they took off what clothes they had left on and started having sex. They were so into it that they didn't care what time it was, though it was very late. It was the first time Maribel had sex, or at least complete sex. While laughing, they even told me what position they were in when Raoul started making strange noises. Maribel thought that he made those noises because of the pleasure he was feeling. Little did she know it wasn't because of what he was feeling but of what he was seeing. Raoul said that when he was about to reach climax, he saw something out the window that left him aghast, and that in that instant he ejaculated. He said that what he saw was something out of this world. First he thought it was maybe a child with some sort of sickness, but he then discarded the idea. Those piercing strange eyes were not human. In the position Maribel was in, she couldn't see any of this, so had no idea of what was going on. When she noticed that after he ejaculated he was still tense and his muscles tight, she asked what was wrong. At that moment the door in the back of the car was opened and Raoul dropped over her like a rag doll. He was still inside her but seemed dead. Maribel started screaming and thought someone must have opened the door, stabbed Raoul in the back, and was now going to kill her. She kept screaming hysterically and with her eyes shut, so she never saw the little man beside the car. She only felt a hand on her forehead and then she lost consciousness. When they both came to, they were dressed but with had no shoes or underwear on. They found blood stains on them but they weren't hurt. It was already morning and the beach was deserted, so they decided to go for a swim. They remembered nothing except for the sex and all the passion. The horror was forgotten until Maribel went to a pharmacy one day to buy some medicine for her mother and saw on a magazine stand one that particularly caught her attention. When she saw the front cover, she started shaking and after that completely lost touch with reality. With her nerves shattered, she showed the magazine to Raoul and they both read it together. They concluded they both have gone through the same experience I had and that they were part of the people I was looking for. They remembered. For a while they talked about getting in touch with me. Raoul thought I wouldn't believe them. Maribel thought that with all the details they remembered I had to believe them. However, they both were concerned about what their family and friends would say. One day they drove to Cabo Rojo, and though they had only planned it to be a casual trip to the beach El Combate, they started to get a strange feeling. Not long after they got to the beach, they got hungry, so they decided to go grab a hot dog at stand on the 301 road. When they got out of the car, the person at the stand was facing backwards, serving other clients. When it was their turn to order, they went mute. Before them stood the person they'd seen on the cover of the magazine that reported on the UFO phenomenon. They ordered their hot dogs and sodas and ate in total silence. They didn't dare go near me. In their feverish state, they didn't go back to El Combate and decided to go back to their town. On their way back, they didn't speak. They were both lost in their own thoughts. After a few weeks and after going over the matter for a few days, they went back to Cabo Rojo. This time they were determined to confront me. When they got to the Tamarindo, they found it closed. They asked around to see where I lived. They found out I lived near the small town of Bocaran, so they made their way over there. When they were about to give up, they saw the same car they'd seen on the Tamarindo that day. They stopped in front of the house where the car was parked and honked the horn. We said our goodbyes late that evening, but after we had exchanged phone numbers and addresses, we agreed to get in touch again for the five of us to meet. They were anxious to meet Mrs. Matilda and Oscar. That night I didn't sleep one bit. I kept going over everything. I was anxious to tell someone about this. I thought of calling Mercedes and the Muckatches, but I reconsidered. I would burst if I didn't tell someone, but I kept silent. Because I didn't sleep at all through the night I was in table get up to go to work the next day. It didn't make much of a difference anyway, since no one was coming to the slander business. I remember thinking before falling asleep that I wasn't alone anymore, so for whatever was left, I was ready for it. That afternoon I got up at around 3. I woke up in a good mood because of the dream I'd had. In that dream there were midget clowns with painted faces and happy smiles, vivid colors, balloons, and circus music. It was an all-out happy atmosphere. In this circus there was a woman selling tea. I sat on a bench to watch the show while I sipped my tea. In the middle of a ring a huge gun appeared, out of which a parade of prehistoric animals came out. There was a man riding one of the dinosaurs and high up in the air a young couple doing stunts in a trapeze. That good feeling stuck with me the rest of the day. I know I was asking for too much, but while I did my chores I kept looking out the window at every car that passed by. I went to take the trash out and I noticed a young woman going by the house in her bicycle. She was about 30 years old. I didn't pay much attention because a lot of people ride around in bicycles in that area. I went back inside to continue my chores. I had books all over the place. Ever since I went public, a lot of people who frequented the Tamarindo brought me all sorts of books having to do with UFOs and extraterrestrials. Some of them I still keep in the same condition as they were given to me. There are some that are very long. Besides the books, I had clothes all around, documents, letters, in sum, a whole bunch of things. I cleaned and tidied up, but always watching out for anyone that might come around. I didn't even turn on the radio, which I'm used to doing while I clean. I wanted to be able to hear if anyone came to visit. Again, the lady in the bicycle passed by the house. I went out to water the grass and yet again there she went. I felt curious, so I told myself that if she passed by again there had to be something. A few minutes after, sure enough, there she was, and this time she slowed down. She almost came to a stop but kept going. I then decided that if again she came by I would stop her and say something. I kept watering the grass and saw her approaching. When she passed by the gate I said, "Exercising a bit, I see." She then stopped. This woman who had long dark hair down to her waist was very strange. Even her bicycle was strange. She wore those tight pants used by cyclists and a similar black shirt. She had on a wide silver-colored belt and the buckle kind of looked like a flying saucer. Her earrings were silver-colored and had like a UFO design. Her sneakers were also silver-colored, but it was obvious they had been painted. She also wore a silver headband and had a Walkman in her belt. Looking at her, I thought the only thing missing was an antennae coming out of her head. I also remember thinking that she was definitely cuckoo. She dressed like an extraterrestrial and found out where I lived to ask me questions or tell me she comes from Venus. What a character, I thought. From that whole ordeal I learned you can't judge a book by its cover. She didn't say anything in regards to my comment about her exercising. She just stared at me like a mad lady and then got off her UFO bicycle and walked up to me very serious. She then said, "I bring you a message." She looked scary now that I was closer to her. She had a lot of makeup and was painted like an Egyptian. Thought she was very pretty. What she inspired was bewilderment. "My name is Helena and I've been chosen," she said. Another one that had her fuses burned, I thought. I really wasn't going to let this one in. Not a chance in hell. Playing along, I asked. "Chosen for what?" "Chosen for the master plan," she replied. "I was there with you and the others in that preparation place." She then assured me her mind woke up when she saw me on television and the magazine. "Who was this woman?" "We've all been chosen to bring light and energy. Our day will come." She kept talking in a very mystical and mysterious voice, like she was seeing everything she was talking about in a crystal ball or reading someone's palm. I didn't know how to get rid of her without being rude. I turned to the host and very cordially asked her to excuse me because I had to return inside to finish up. I ended by wishing her a pleasant afternoon. She smiled for the first time and from her belt buckle she took out a white envelope. She gave it to me without saying a word. I thanked her and went inside. I put the envelope on top of the refrigerator and looked at her again from the window. I didn't want her to get inside somehow and do something crazy. She got on her UFO cycle, put on her Walkman's headphones, and took off. Right then some cousins of mine arrived to ask me why I hadn't gone to work. They invited me to go with them to the commercial center in the town of Myagas. I changed clothes and went with them to the mall, but I told them I had to be back by sundown because I was expecting a visit. Afterwards and back at my place nobody came. I got tired of waiting so I decided to start getting ready for bed. While in my room I remembered the visit I'd gotten that day from the UFO looking lady and the envelope she gave me, but I couldn't remember where I'd left it. I looked everywhere, under the bed, behind the sofa, but still nothing. It was as if the ground swallowed it. I knew I wasn't going to be able to sleep now if I couldn't find it. I practically made a mess of the whole house again looking for it. I decided to go to bed. I couldn't sleep and I got thirsty. I got up and went to the refrigerator and, aha! I drank my glass of water and went back to bed to read whatever was inside. There were three notes in different papers, like written in verse. My favorite one read: when you see me, you'll think I'm not right in my head. Everybody thinks the same. I have a good heart. That's what Amaran says. I found you today. Now I'm not alone. Another paper had a poem that talked about the sun, and the third one had a letter, the letter K. I felt awful. What gave me the right to judge that woman by her appearance and how she expressed herself? I started to cry like a child. I felt angry at myself. God only knows what that poor woman has suffered, and there I was making fun of her. I was really stupid and my behavior was inexcusable. Because I know she'll read this, I wish to apologize to her one more time, tell her I love her and that I understand her even though others reject her. Forgive me, Helena, I'm not perfect. I'm only human, a human from this planet called Earth. I'll do my best to not judge another single human being according to what they wear, no matter how weird it looks, and I repeat that I'm not ashamed to be seen with you anywhere. The same as with the other six, I love you very much. That night I tore myself up thinking she had come to me, and I let her go without even knowing where she lived or even a telephone number to reach her. I thought she had to live close by because she was on her bicycle. I had to find out where she came from. I knew I wouldn't rest until I found her. Maybe she'll come back tomorrow, I thought. Maybe the whole experience had traumatized her in such a way to make her dress and talk like that, and I'd made fun of her. That night I didn't have pleasant dreams about circuses. It was a brief but horrible nightmare. I was riding a bicycle when suddenly I started going down a very steep hill. The brakes were not working and I was taking speed. I heard people laughing but couldn't see them. The road ended on a cliff, and when I got to it I screamed, and that woke me up. The next day I went to work at the Tamarindo but felt very depressed. The worst thing was that I had nobody to tell it to. Maybe I would have felt better if I'd had somebody to talk it over with. Again I thought of Anna, Mercedes, and the other muckatchers. I didn't tell my family about the current events to not get them involved. I knew they would tell me to stay away from everything. My father would have said that all those people and me were being influenced by the devil. But there was something else that prevented me from telling anyone else. It was as if my subconscious told me I shouldn't talk about the people that were inexplicable coming into my life. Poor Mama, she thought all this mess had ended a long time ago. I let her heart rest. I was in the Tamarindo only for a few hours when I decided to go look for Helena. I didn't know where to start. I would take the cart back home and get the papers she gave me. Maybe if I had the papers with me I could do something similar to what those psychics do. I was just being silly, but I didn't know what else to do. Maybe with the papers and letting my instinct guide me I'd just drive and maybe I would find her. To sum up, I spent the whole day driving around different towns and neighborhoods like an idiot. Every now and then I would put the envelope she gave me on my forehead to see if I got a sign. I spent a whole tank of gas and nothing. Every woman I saw on a bicycle I thought was her. I even stopped to ask and gave her descriptions. People must have thought I was looking for a Martian. It had gotten late and I gave up. I was so sure I'd find her, but it didn't turn out that way. I'm not a psychic for sure. To my surprise, when I got home I found her bicycle leaning against my gate, but there was no sign of her. I called her out, but I didn't get a response. I thought that maybe she jumped over the gate and had gone to the backyard. I opened the gate and brought her bike in. It was as strange as her owner, chromed and polished. I think they call those chevins or something like that. In Puerto Rico we call them bras grandes. Big she asses. She had many objects on the handlebar. They were all more or less related to UFOs, little men that looked like extraterrestrials, the space shuttle, military planes, and a little globe painted like it was Earth. They all made up a strange combination, but if you think about, they meant something. The most interesting thing was that in the center of the handlebar she had a little version of the Enterprise from Star Trek. I still couldn't find her. I searched around the house but nothing. I went inside, and though it may seem absurd, I looked for her there too. I sat down on the stairs in the back to think and wait. I suddenly heard someone's laugh. It came from a tree that's in the back of the house and in front of where I was sitting. This startled me, as did the seed that fell on my feet. I looked up and saw something moving. I had to be Helena. I called her name and she answered, "I'm up here, come up." I tried to go up but couldn't at first. With great effort I got up to where she was, but I stopped when I came up close to her. Though she now looked like a different person, it was indeed her. She didn't look anything like the woman from the day before. I asked if she was sure she was the one from yesterday. "Of course. I'm the same on the inside," she replied in a very particular way. "But your hair was longer, almost down to your waist, and now it's blonde and short," I said. "That wasn't my hair. It was a wig. I don't like to look the same all the time." "Oh, I see. Yesterday you were from the Addams family and today you're like Madonna. Did you read what was in the envelope, Amori?"
"Yes."
"And what do you think?"
"That it was about time you showed up, Helena. Do you by any chance know a Mrs. Matilda or a police officer by the name of Oscar?"
"No."
"How about a young married couple, Maribel and Raoul? Do you know them?"
"I don't know any of these people.
Why should I?"
I told Helena about them, all the while she listened like a child, very carefully and thoughtful. Immediately she said she wanted to meet them, as asked for their phone numbers and addresses. I told her it was best if we all got together at my house soon. I was tired and uncomfortable in the tree, so I suggested we climbed down. I offered her the hammock, but she preferred to lie on the floor of the garage. She was starting to feel less unusual to me, and the more we talked the less strange as well. I felt a great affection towards her. It was like talking to my kid sister. She told me she lived with her aunt and that in her neighborhood everyone, including her own family, thought she was crazy. She dropped out of school because even the teachers would call her crazy. Helena has seen probably every movie having to do with UFOs and extraterrestrials. The subject attracted her since she was a little girl. She also has many magazines, but her favorite is that one that tells of our experience. When she read it, she took it very naturally and then told her family. They didn't believe her and told her she was now worse than ever. They threatened to commit her again if she insisted she was also in that place with that other nut job on the cover of the magazine. When Helena was younger, and before going through the experience, she had indeed been under psychiatric care for a while. She never took the pills they gave her because she said they would drive her crazy. In order to stop the treatment, she told me she started to dress how everyone told her to and act as others would define normally. According to the Department of Mental Health, Helena had been cured. After finishing the treatment, she continued her life her way. Her mother died of alcohol abuse when she was 15. The night she got taken, she was visiting her mother's tomb.
She had taken her flowers and decided to meditate there for a while. It was very late that night and she had climbed over the fence like other times before when it was close to Mother's Day. She had fallen asleep over her mother's tomb. When she woke up it was already daytime. She didn't remember anything strange but she did feel different. She looked everywhere for the flowers she brought her mother but she didn't find them. She then took some flowers from a nearby house and brought them back to the cemetery. She was used to buying the UFO magazine and she'd seen the television show. When she saw the show she felt she knew me from somewhere but it wasn't until she read the article that she was able to remember. Helena called the two numbers in the magazine and was told that any message or information for me had to be given to them. She didn't want to speak with them so from that day she started her search. Knowing that I lived in Cabo Rojo she then dedicated all her time to covering it completely on her bicycle. She had faith she'd be able to find me. According to her that's how she came to find me. When it was time for her to go I wanted to tell her not to. I wanted her to stay with me. I felt like I should take care of her like a big brother does with a little sister. I wanted to protect her from the cruelty that surrounded her, from that part of humanity that thrives in condemning the other. I felt anger for all the injustice she's had to endure, all in the name of our society's mental health. Helena stayed until sundown. I asked her to spend the night but she said maybe another time. She then returned to her world, one filled with hostility towards her for being different. Believe me when I tell you I know what it's like to be rejected for being different. She had no phone over in her aunt's house so she gave me her residential and postal address. I told her how to get to the Tamarindo and promised her I'd write her to let her know when we would all meet. That way all of us would get to know each other better. I again felt the urge to call Mercedes, Anna, or any of the other muckatches to tell them everything. I'd be lying if I said I knew exactly why I chose not to tell them. It was beyond my comprehension. Like I mentioned before, maybe it was my own subconscious. Even now I'm still not sure. I would tell them everything, but this was different. I dare say that if it was not my subconscious then external influences were at work. I say this because under normal circumstances I would have immediately called Mercedes, Anna, Rosa, Brenda, and Doris. I wanted to talk to them about the people I had met but it was as if something stopped me. There were times where I took the phone in my hand with the intention of calling them but I'd immediately hang up. That afternoon after Helena left I spent it on my hammock just thinking and watching the sunset. I pondered on all that had happened in the last few days, on the mysterious appearance of these five people. It couldn't have been just coincidence. They couldn't have given me so many details of that place where the extraterrestrials took us without actually being there. They were definitively there with me. And for what purpose would they be revealing themselves so suddenly? What was behind all this? With all these things I went back and forth in my mind. I closed my eyes to rest a bit and I fell asleep. Christina's barks woke me. Everything was dark and when I got up I noticed a small figure, about 4 feet tall, standing outside the gate. Christina was barking at him. I ran inside like a bolt of lightning and shut the door behind me. I also closed the back door. I panicked and my breathing got heavy. I then heard the creature speak. It called me by my name. I heard my name clearly 2 times. I sat on the sofa in front of the windows that looked straight out to where the figure was calling me from. I looked at the clock and it said 10 p.m. The restaurant was still open so I thought if I could get out through the back door I could go over there and ask for help. All the lights of the house were turned off so I dared look out the window. I thought that the figure couldn't see me. I looked everywhere but didn't see anything. I felt my heart was in my throat. I then saw some movement in the restaurant's parking. It was that little figure. It walked at a fast pace towards the restaurant. I saw him go in through my window. Since there were a lot of cars in the parking lot I was expecting to hear lots of screams and see people running out. I waited a few seconds and nothing. Among the many scenarios that I imagined there was one where the creatures put everyone inside the restaurant to sleep so they could have their way with them and not have any witnesses. I looked through all my windows to see if there were other figures but I didn't see any. I knew I had to get out of there. As quietly as possible I opened the door. I thought of taking the car, but the noise of the engine might have attracted attention. I then thought of just running to the next town, Bokaran. I didn't even open the gate. I slowly went through the barbed wire that marked the estate next to me and formed the right, got to the street. As soon as I set foot on the road I heard the restaurant door opening. I froze, I couldn't run. From inside came one of the employees with the trash. When he saw me standing there like a statue he said, "Hey Amori, how are you, buddy?" I was able to thaw out and I crossed the street. Sighing, I asked if everything was all right inside. He said everything was fine and asked me why I was whispering. I told him I just thought I heard a noise coming from inside. He repeated that everything was well and invited me inside for a soda. I came up with the excuse that I was looking for one of my cats, so he went back inside. I then peeked through one of the restaurant's windows to make sure nobody was watching me. I could hear the Spanish music coming from inside. Inside was a little creature with a woman. His mother? The damn figure turned out to be a 7 or 8 year old child. But then what was he doing in front of my house and how did he know my name? I observed the boy with whom I could only guess was his mother as they ate in one of the smaller tables for two people. After a few seconds I crossed the street feeling like the biggest imbecile in the world. I splashed some cold water on my face and sat on the hammock waiting for them to come out. They came out about a half hour later and both looked at me. They got in their small dark-colored car and came up to my gate. The boy stayed in the car while his mother got out and came closer to the gate. "Good evening, are you Amori? I'd like to talk if you have a few minutes," she said. Because she was with the boy and didn't look suspicious or dangerous, I opened the gate and invited her in. "My name is Neri Ida and I've come to talk to you about what you said on the show and what you wrote on the magazine," she added. We sat in the garage while the boy played with Christina. Neri Ida seemed very nervous. I told her there was nothing to be nervous about and that she hadn't been the first one to come. She said she'd been in that place with me and the others. I asked her what she could tell me that she hadn't seen on the television or read in the article that could prove she was there with us. She said she thought there was nothing she could tell me. Right then my mind started to race and I thought that this was another curious person interested in my story for personal reasons. I then began to work on an excuse to get rid of her. I wasn't in the mood to answer questions or narrate my experience again. Neri Ida called her son and asked him to bring her the purse from the car. She then looked me straight in the eyes and said, "Look, I know you don't know me and that you must think I'm crazy. I'm not. But if you don't help me then I really think I'll go crazy." The boy came back with his mom's purse. I immediately thought the worst. What is she getting from her purse? A gun? I really don't remember anything. To me I've never gone through something as strange as what you said happened to you and those other people. Here's something I want to show you that has no explanation. I'm a very religious woman and I don't believe in extraterrestrial or their ships. But this is about to drive me mad. Take a look at this and then you tell me what's going on." It was a picture of a group of people. I couldn't see well so I turned the garage light on. I couldn't believe. This was too much. Not only was I in the picture but also Mrs. Matilda in a nightgown, Oscar, Maribel and Raoul barefoot and their hair all messed up, and Helena but with red hair. Amongst other people I did not recognize, Neri Ida was also there in typical religious woman clothing. In the middle of the pictures, dressed in black and with a smile on his face, was Amaran. Behind the group you could see part of an immense object. I recognized it immediately. The UFO in my photos. It looked like an enormous house behind us. "Where did you get this picture?" "I don't know. It just appeared in my purse a few years ago and I've taken it with me everywhere I go since. Please Amori, tell me what all this means, I beg you." I tried to explain to Neri Ida as best as I could but she kept saying it couldn't be, that it was too incredible. I told her I also thought it was incredible but that I had come to accept it, even against my own will. She started to cry and to say that it was all the work of the devil. The boy got frightened seeing her cried so he started to cry too. I tried to calm her down. From the 16 people I was only able to recognize some. Including Amaran, and myself of course. There was also someone whose name I didn't know and whom I did not know personally but that seemed very familiar.